You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, brought to you in association with Forest Hepburn and McDonald's Signs.
Getting noticed isn't always easy, because there's so much noise.
But at Forest Hepburn and McDonald's, we make it easy. With standout signs, business cards, shop fronts, banners, leaflets, vehicle graphics, the lot. Showcasing your products, advertising your brand, and getting business noticed. So, what can we do for you? Forest Hepburn and McDonald's, creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
Kingsley rolls to the boys. Back to Kingsley. Curls it twice. Lovely effort.
2-0!
No! Kingsley magic!
Hello and welcome to Scarves Around the Funnel, the podcast dedicated to Heart of Midlothian Football Club. The year was 1990, a year that Germany reunified as East and West became one again. Nelson Mandela was released from prison after 27 years. Margaret Thatcher resigned as Prime Minister in the UK. And in Scottish football, Aberdeen won the double. Celtic finished trophyless and in fifth place in the table. And Aberdeen's Jim Bett won the PFA Player of the Year award. There has only been one player outside of Rangers and Celtic to win that award since, well, until now, that is. I am Laurie Dunsire, joined by a man who I'm sure is very pleased with the news that Lawrence Shankland has become the first ever Hearts player to win the PFA Premiership Player of the Year award. It is, of course, Mark Donaldson.
Hello, and I'm as delighted, as was every Hearts supporter, that it was a deserved victory, and it's the players, it's your peers voting, and they know that he's been the best player. There would have been a big outcry had he not have picked up the award. What that does for him and perhaps his future value and perhaps teams that might be interested in him in the summer remains to be seen. Well, you took us back to 1990 there. I'm just going to take you back 12 months. Hearts came from behind with St Mirren leading 2-0 at the break. Lawrence Shankland scored a stoppage time penalty, but it wasn't really enough for Hearts, because after that they were 5 points behind Aberdeen in third with just 3 games to go, same as we are right now. It started in week 30 when Hearts lost at Kilmarnock and they dropped from third to fourth and they were never able to get back to third. So 35 games, 49 points 12 months ago. Fast forward to now, 35 games, 63 points with an 11-point lead over Kilmarnock, unassailable. So Hearts are playing in Europe. The big question, which we cannot answer right now, is the Football Writers Player of is the PFA Scotland Player of the Year, Lawrence Shankland, who may well still be the Football Writers Player of the Year, going to be around for the duration of Hearts' European campaign next season?
Yes, well, we can talk about that and just how good Lawrence Shankland is. We also have joining us on the podcast a man who was probably too young to even be shoegazing in 1990, Scott McIntosh.
That reference is just going to come up every so often. even gents, yeah, I mean, it's. I think we can all feel, you know, safely say it was great news that we all got on Sunday when Lauren Shankland got his much deserved award from his peers. It remains to be seen whether this is the final chapter in the redemption arc of his career or whether he's still got a few more chapters to write in there.
Absolutely. Well, we can start with a wee chat about Lauren Shankland. We have got other things to get into this week, but of course, Sunday the award was confirmed. Many people saying it was always going to be Lawrence Shankland. I think the fact that he was up against three players from Rangers and Celtic, especially Matt O'Reilly and Jack Butland, maybe opened up a question that it could go elsewhere, and history certainly has dictated that it tends to go to one of the two sides in Glasgow. But it was Lawrence Shankland who picked up. We got some reaction very quickly on Twitter as well from people. So I'm just going to go through some of these. Chungster says, I started going and was fortunate enough to see Robbo, saw him break the goal scoring record, etc. Shanks is the best I've seen as a goal scorer since. Can do nothing in a game and nick a goal. Worth his weight in gold. Fortunate to see two fantastic number nines. Rogue Daddy said, thoroughly deserved, great goal scorer, great captain, and a classy guy to boot. Well done, Shanks. Well on route to being a legend. If he stays, may even attain greatest ever. He has the potential. Graham says, it's not just the goals, his link up, his game intelligence, and his hold up are far better than folk give him credit for. He's been absolutely outstanding for us, and I hope he stays for longer. Best striker since Robbo, without a doubt. Ewan said, a classic centre forward, not had one in Scotland for years. Even Des Roach, even the referees are getting involved, former referees. He says, thoroughly deserved for a fantastic season. Well done to Lawrence and to all at Hearts. And Andy Grant said, great to have him, or had him if he leaves. Wouldn't sell unless he really downs tools either. Club hopefully pushing all the positives. Individual awards, hopefully a better squad built around him. Captain, fan favourite, 5-year deal, 10 grand plus a week. Big bonuses and future bonuses. So, you know, yeah, back-to-back 20 goal seasons in the league, first time in over 50 mm-hmm. years Hearts players done that, and first time anyone in Scotland has done it in over a decade. James Kearney on Hearts Standard, I notice, also mentioned the fact that Shanklin's provided 9 match winning goals in the league this season. Other than Cyril Dessers, who's got 6, no other player has won more than 4. And I think that's a big thing there, isn't it, Mark? You know, you talk about quality of player, but if you're talking about an MVP, as they do over in your neck of the woods quite often, there wouldn't even be competition in that in terms of who's most valuable to their team. I mean, Lawrence Shanklin by far, isn't it?
Hugely. One of the messages you've just read out saying potentially could be the greatest ever. No, let's just cool our jets here. There's a bar and no one's getting above John Robertson. Lawrence Shanklin, since joining Hearts, has been fantastic. If you were to add in his goals per game ratio at Ayr, Dundee United, not so much in Belgium, then you're talking. He's certainly going to be in the conversation if he stays, but he'll never be the greatest ever because it's a generational thing as well. There'll be people that, I don't know what the age of that person that said that is. He or she might be kind of late teens, early 20s, and they didn't see Robbo in their prime. People who are even older than that, the terrible trio, Con, Bald and Wardhall, and even before that, Barney Battles. And it's all relative to the generation. What you said, I think, is important. We have a player who is a game changer. I was watching some highlights there. I think Scotty put some stuff up. There was BBC stuff as well. The goals at Dens Park. I mean, the goal at Easter Road. That game was meandering. It was a horrible game, meandering to a 0-0 draw. He'd missed a penalty, and you're thinking, oh, it's finally going to cost us. Because if I remember rightly, his missed penalties this season, Hearts won all the games that he missed penalties in, ultimately. But he's got this ability to turn very little into something very special. And he's done it on many occasions. The interesting thing for me, it'd be interesting to get your two takes on this as well, is when you... Hearts don't want to sell him. Hearts want to keep him. He made a comment afterwards that the press picked up on when they interviewed him after winning the award about fulfilling his ability and his career. And he didn't say that he's going to leave Hearts, but you can twist what he said. He wants the best. He wants to play at the highest level possible. Who's going to come in for him? Right. So if he was going to go to Rangers or Celtic, I think he would have gone in January. Rangers now, with hindsight, fucked up. Right? They spent, what was it, $3 million loan deal plus wages, whatever they're paying on Fabio Silva, should have gone for Lawrence Shanklin. I'm not saying they would have won the league, but I think they would be in a better position than they are right now. So is that something they'll look at? Because their transfer policy is not to sign someone who's going to be 29 years old on the 10th of August. But he'll get you goals. He's only going to have a year left. If they're not interested in him and Celtic don't want him, then where does that leave us? And where does it leave him? And it might come to the stage that Neil McCann and his advisors basically say, you know what, as much as we would like you to move elsewhere and as much as you would like to move elsewhere as well to a step up, not just a sideways move, the best option for you might just be staying at Tynecastle, where you can cement your legacy at the football club, sign a long-term deal, stay with the football club till the end of your career. Then you can be in the same conversation as the Hearts greats of previous years. But who else, apart from Hearts, wants Lawrence Shankland? What do you think?
I mean, that's a question that's very difficult to answer, because we don't know. There could be many suitors out there who we would even consider. You know, he said himself that he would consider going to, outside of the UK again. I'll get Scott's thoughts on something here, because, you know, he mentioned the quotes, and I know part of what he said has been taken, and it's fine, you know, and I noticed a few people saying clickbait. For me, it wasn't so much clickbait, some of the stuff with this one. This was more people highlighting the big lines that he said. But I'm going to quote a bit more from what he said. He said, Shankland, this is afterwards in the PFA Awards, "I'm coming to a point in my contract with Hearts going into my last year where conversations will be had. There is no point in denying that. We will need to see what comes of those conversations. I have still got ambitions to get to a level." In football, you always find your level. Then you get to a level and say, right, I wasn't good enough there. I don't feel like I've got to that level that I am not good enough. It would be nice to kick on to see how far I can go into the game. Try and play at a higher level than this. We will see what it brings, but I would never be disrespectful to what I've got at Hearts. The club have been great to me since I've gone there, and I've given me a real platform to perform at a high level with a top Scottish club. I really enjoy it there. If I'm there for next season, I am more than happy. You want to push on? Can I get somewhere where I say, right, that wasn't good enough? I don't feel I've experienced that yet. You could finish your career and have regrets and say, I wish I'd tried that and seen if I could play there. If you get the chance, you try and go and do it. We've had really open conversations about it, Nazy, myself, and the club as a whole. We all understand the situation. They want me to progress in my career as well and do really well. The main thing is everybody's on the same page. We will see what the summer brings. And when he was prompted about maybe staying at Hearts, he said, yep, that is another option. I've got a duty and a responsibility to set myself up as well. And I feel like I owe that to myself with how hard I've worked in my career. I will look to do that as well. If that is at Hearts, then so be it. I will be happy. So I don't know what you think, Scott. For me, I think it's fair enough. I think, if anything, Lawrence Shankland's maybe just being too honest about it. I think he's basically made it pretty clear. He would possibly stay at Hearts, but he's also going to explore other options. And I don't think many people could really deny him that, given he's late 20s, and this could be, you know, if an opportunity arises, it could be career changing.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think he handled the situation very well. I know that there's probably Hearts fans that were probably wanting him to sound more definite on you know, entertaining the option of staying at the club. What I would say to that is that he's currently in the process of trying to negotiate a new bumper payday deal, what would potentially be his last big contract in football. I think he played it very well and very safe at the weekend, where he didn't want to give off the impression that he's too keen to stay, but then he didn't exactly rule it out either. And I think that's ultimately the best thing that he's doing for himself in that situation at the moment. So I don't think we can begrudge him that. I think the comments about wanting to maybe apply himself at a higher level, figure out if he does have another level to reach, I think we have reaped the benefits of that mindset over the last 2 years. You know, I think one of the reasons why he has been so productive and he's added to his game, even in the last sort of two or three seasons since leaving Dundee United and going over to Belgium, is because he has ambition and he wants to play at a higher level. So I think you've got to accept that with the risk that comes with that and potentially losing someone earlier than you want to, there is the benefits to that, and that's having someone who's hit 20 plus league goals in two consecutive seasons. For me, what I need to see out of this situation is probably more so from Hearts' end. I think Hearts are going to have to be quite, they've got to watch, because obviously you don't want to annoy someone when you're trying to negotiate a new contract. But I think there needs to be somewhat of a timeline or a deadline set against the contract talks. I don't think you can allow this to rumble on too long. My chief concern is that we leave ourselves in a situation where come August, we lose them and then were maybe scrambling about trying to loan someone in from the, you know, the English Premiership who's got less experience. So, yeah, I think my concern just now isn't so much about Warren Shankland and what he wants to do. It's more so that I think Hearts need to play this right, and they've got to consider Stephen Naismith's plans and what he wants to achieve next season. Because to me, we already need to bring in one striker for next season, regardless of the Shankland yeah. situation. So if he goes, you're then needing two players through the door. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, but I wouldn't, if I was to give Hearts fans a bit of optimism about this, I wouldn't go reading too much into what he said at the weekend. I think he's got to, you know, he's got to leave himself open to all possibilities, because unfortunately, loyalty is very fragile at best in football. And he doesn't owe us anything. He's gave us, you know, the productivity. We've paid him for it. And that's fine. It's been a good relationship up to this point. So whatever he does over the summer, all the very best of luck to him. He's definitely not going to Rangers. He's definitely not going to Celtic. I find it very hard to believe that he'll go down south. If he does leave Hearts, it'll be because he'll end up in a sort of technically minded league, or he gets offered the big bucks and he goes to Saudi.
Let me put some time frames on this and a time scale. The summer transfer window in the Scottish Premiership closes on September the 2nd. This first leg of the Europa League playoff, our first European game, is on the 22nd of August, and second legs the following Thursday on the 29th of August. So, if Lawrence Shankland's still at the football club at that stage and plays in both of those games, the draw's the following day, and if we are to get through in the Europa League, it will mean a bit more money. So maybe, if we know that we will be playing in the Europa League, which is two extra games in January, that might be an opportunity to give him more cash. Now, when you look at the transfer windows, they don't all close on September the 2nd. Right? Serie A's August the 31st. Scott was mentioning perhaps going abroad to a different style of league. La Liga's the same date. But Belgium, I doubt you'll go back there, but I'm just giving you an example here that Belgium's league transfer window closes on September 6th. Gets a bit messy here because the Turkish transfer window in the summer closes on September 13th. So Hearts could be in a position where they lose players after our transfer window is closed and cannot replace them unless they're free transfers, because other leagues have summer transfer windows that are still open. The other one that's of interest, the Saudi Pro League summer transfer window doesn't close until October 6th. That could be an issue. So that's where we are with regards to, he could still be here, and hopefully he will still be here after we've played both of our legs of the Europa League playoff. And if we get to a stage where we have qualified and ensured 8 group games instead of 6th, that might put us in a better position to offer him more. Then you get to the argument, how much more do you want to offer? Okay, let's say hypothetically he wants 16 to stay. Say he's on 6 right now. Hearts have offered 8. They went back with 9. Say that. They're still 7 grand apart. Okay? Is he going to get 16 at Hearts? Probably not. But if you're his representatives, of course you want to go into a negotiation. You're not going to just say, oh, we'll take, if we're on 6 or whatever he's on, we'll take 8.5. You want to go in over the top and then try and, it's like Shark Tank over here, Dragon's Den in the UK. You go in looking for more than you're prepared to accept. If you get what you get, then great. So how much do you think we should go to? Bearing in mind, there's no one else at Hearts near 5 figures a week. Do we set an awkward precedent if we go substantially higher than 10, for example, when it comes to perhaps disgruntlement of players? Or is that the type of players that we should now be looking at? Guys who are 10 grand, like the key players, if we're going to try and ensure that we're clear in third and European football is a regular thing at Tynecastle. How high should we go to pay for Lawrence Shankland? What do you reckon?
That's a tough question. I think in your hypothetical scenario that you've laid out there, I think 16 would be crazy. I don't think we'd go anywhere near that. Five figures? Yeah. I mean, this is just pulling numbers out of the air. Would I say 12? Maybe. I think you'd want it to be heavily incentivized, because I guess the danger is you end up, and I'm not saying this will happen and hope it doesn't, but you end up, but you know, people have talked about giving him a 5-year contract and a huge salary. I mean, maybe, but you know, Lawrence Shanklin will be pushing 34 by the end of it if you give him a 5-year deal. If you give him a huge base salary, you're committing yourself to a hell of a lot of money then. If someone drops off or, you know, isn't performing, then I would say that that's the kind of money that Hearts can't afford to be investing over that length of period. What's that going to be, a 4 million quid or something, if you were talking about those figures? So I think a heavily incentivized one, I think, is, and I know we did that back when we started offering bigger contracts when Romanov was first in charge, wasn't he? There were some big contracts, but a lot of it was appearance and
yes,
clean sheet or goals, or win bonuses as well. So basic, I think 16 would be ludicrous. 10, yeah, I think you could push it to that, and I think you could argue that even though other players aren't getting that, you're talking about a player who's, you know, in a different, you know, relatively speaking, if you're at other clubs and you've got a Harry Kane at Bayern Munich, or you've got Kylian Mbappe at PSG, soon to be Real Madrid, you know, players like that, then they will earn much more than their teammates, albeit they all earn much more than Hearts players. So yeah, I would think I would like to see something, if it was to happen, even though we might not ever learn the details, something which is a very good contract, but with very healthy bonuses mainly, I think. Because you never know what might happen to players. They get an injury, they never come back quite the same. Suddenly you've got 5 years of a, you know, imagine Hearts having to pay 5 years and a player on 16 grand a week who is maybe not performing. I mean, we gave Stefan a damn 10, didn't we? And although Stefan was a fantastic player for Hearts, he wasn't quite the same player, was he, by the end?
No. No. I'm looking at Hibernian's wages to turnover ratio. And if you remember back under the days of Ladd, we were triple digits. It was unsustainable. Hibs went from 71% to 81%. Supposedly Dylan Venter's on 9 grand a week. Now, that's, he's negotiated that. That's fine. It's far too much for what you're getting back. But they have underachieved this season. But that's a dangerous figure. When you get above, I think they say, what, 60%? You don't really want to be much more than that. To go from 71 to 81, that's dangerous. So I agree with you. I think 12 should be our tops. I don't think he would accept 10. Certainly, first off, it all depends on who else is, as Scotty said, who else is out there and is willing to make a bid. And what his agents and representatives found in January, there was no kind of golden ticket out of Tynecastle. There was no interested Saudi parties. Rangers and Celtic weren't interested. Clubs from England weren't interested. So it might be the case that this is a deal that's done late on for him to stay at Tynecastle, because ultimately there's nowhere else that he could go for his demands. There's loads of places that would, the teams that would want to sign him, but depends on his demands. Scott, would you, if you were to settle right now on 12 grand a week for Lawrence Shanklin, A, would you go to that? B, do you think he would accept that?
I think there's a couple of factors that are unknown to us that would maybe impact on it. I mean, for example, I don't know how prevalent favoured nations contract clauses are in the realms of football. And I know it's something that can take part in other walks of life, but could there be one or two individuals at the club that have a clause in their contract that states if the highest earner is on X amount per week, I have to match that. So there might be one or two issues like that the club need to take into consideration. I think for me, I wouldn't go above 10. One of the reasons I say that is there is a risk, albeit a small one, that Lauren Shankland
is slap bang in the middle, or possibly even past the middle, of the peak years of his career, if you consider the age that he's coming up to. So I think we've got to, I get that Hearts might have to make decisions over the next few weeks and months that could get a bit of short-term pushback from fans, because we all love Lauren Shankland, we love what he's done for us the last couple of years. We all want him to stay, but I think we've got to make sure that we don't remove ourselves from the sort of stability and the prudency that I think we've shown as a club over the last 10 years. And as much as we've had things to say, you know, critically speaking about the Hearts board, I think that when it comes to financial deals, contract deals, I think we've been pretty good at that over the last few years. And I think we've got to watch. Yeah, you want to acknowledge that he has been a talisman and a leader and a good role model for the club over the last couple of years. But you've also got to consider the squad and also, you know, future incoming players as well. You know, if other agents get a sniff that Lauren Shankland's on 10 grand a week, what does that do when we try and negotiate fees with potential other players? So there's a lot to take into consideration. But for me, I wouldn't go above 10.
Okay. Fair. Well, we probably should move on and speak about some football matches that took place as well and are going to take place. So we will talk about the Celtic game. We'll talk about Hearts going to Europe, because of course that is now confirmed in terms of being able to guarantee league phase football, and that Dundee game coming up. You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forrest Hepburn and McDonald Signs, who have been offering creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. So, at the weekend, Hearts travel to Celtic Park, looking to make it 3 wins in a row against Celtic since the 1960s. Maybe no real surprise that it was an unchanged Hearts side from the team that played so well in that first half against Kilmarnock last time out, albeit couldn't find a way through and had to settle for a point at Rugby Park. And in this game, Mark, I think it made sense to keep that sort of shape as well. We saw it work very effectively when Hearts were at Celtic Park before. In terms of who was available and how well certain players had played, Cammy Devlin from the middle, obviously Vargas, the man supporting Shankland and playing with the two wing-backs in Cochrane and Lembekisa, and that back three, which can be so solid, which has been so solid at times this season, Rolls, Kent and Kingsley. I think it was all kind of boxes ticked in terms of how we lined up for this one for Stephen Naismith.
I think the only toss of the coin was the right wing back. Was it Lembekisa or was it Atkinson? And Lembekisa got the nod, obviously gave it away, or gave away possession prior to the second goal. But I actually thought with the team, it made total sense. And I also thought we started the game pretty well. And it was similar in a way to the way that we started, before Celtic scored, of course, to the way that we started the last time we were in the East End of Glasgow against Celtic.
Yeah, Hearts started very positively. Opening 60 seconds, worked it in from the right. Lawrence Shankland had a shot that was deflected wide by Cameron Carter-Vickers. There was we'll talk about the opening Celtic goal in a second, but the 11th minute, Grant had a ball in from the left. There was a Devlin snapshot that was tipped wide by Joe Hart. And I thought Hearts were actually breaking the Celtic press quite well. Ironically, Scott, I actually thought Hearts were at their best in the period of the game that we lost 2-0 rather than the rest of the game that we only lost 1-0.
Yeah, it was a very strange football match, especially in that sort of opening half an hour period. I think when we were talking about our predictions last week, I did say that one of the things that we could take comfort from is the fact that Celtic have struggled to sort of move the ball quickly enough this season quite a lot. But I did preface that by saying that the only issue that we have is that they still have lots of players that can come up with individual moments. And I think you saw evidence of that with the two goals that they scored in the opening 20 minutes. But away from what Celtic did during that time, I felt that we were really aggressive, not just on the front foot, but also from the back. If you notice, there was a lot of occasions, particularly during the first half an hour, where both Rolls and Kingsley were aggressively attacking and engaging with the forwards, more or less on the halfway line. And that's what ultimately led to us having 54% possession in the first 25 minutes of that match. You will seldom see sides outside the Rangers going to Parkhead and enjoying that much of the ball. So I think, you know, we can talk about the score and the performance in general, but I do think there was a lot to take heart from in terms of how we did approach the game. It's just a case of there's still areas of the park that we need to improve on with personnel and maybe slight tweaks that we need to make. But I still take a lot on board in a positive manner from how we started that match.
Forrest Hepburn and MacDonald have been making creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. For more, visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
Hearts did go behind, unfortunately, in this game against Celtic. In less than 4 minutes, it was a corner from the right, punched clear by Xander Clark. It was returned into the box by Hatate, and Kyogo Furuhashi, who does love scoring against Hearts, got his ninth against the men in maroon with a close range header. Now, when I saw an angle of this, we didn't get a kind of complete side on angle of it. I thought it looked like he must be offside. And this is an interesting one because later on, obviously the goal is given and we'll just have to accept the lines. It does look, is very tight, but the lines drawn look like Xander Clark's boot as he steps back and Furuhashi comes back a little bit himself, maybe just plays him on. But what was very evident for me after this is that a lot of people don't understand the offside rule. And I don't just mean that, you know, it can get complicated when people start talking about who's active and who's inactive, etc., etc. But I just mean the basics of it. Because, Mark, I saw a lot of comments with Celtic outraged that was some kind of conspiracy that they even had this decision reviewed. And I even spoke to Hearts fans later on who were like, I'll be honest, I didn't understand why it was even looked at first, because Shankland was like way behind the play. I think because goalkeepers are generally the last line of defence, some people seem to forget that you need two players either between or in line with the attacker. Because to me, I thought it was offside. I was sure it would be disallowed when I first saw it.
There's certain laws of the game which they don't happen very often, and for that not many people know about. This can be one of them. One that came up recently was the additional yellow card for a player in a shootout, in a penalty shootout, that having already been booked doesn't mean he's sent off having received a second yellow. But
again, I'll openly admit I did not know that.
I did not know that either. But I knew this, and like, we're not going to know absolutely everything. Our job, I think you and I, Laurie, as commentators, is to know as much as we can the laws of the game. And this isn't a new law. This isn't something that's been tweaked. It's two players. It's not goalkeeper plus one. It's two players, and it has been pretty much always. But again, it's not something that happens very often. There's it's not just football fans, a lot of football players, probably most football players, have got a grasp on the laws of the game, but it's no more than that. It's the same for a lot of supporters, because it's not our job as fans. As a commentator, it's my job to know, because I've got to give you the info, and Laurie's got to give you the info when you're watching Hearts broadcasts or when you're watching ESPN. I can't give you the wrong info. So if we don't know, then it's up to us to find out. And if we don't know, we've got to keep it generic. But if you should go into a game, that's not a law of the game that we shouldn't not know. We should know that. And you did, thankfully. And it was just, people are saying, well, but the lines, or they're guessing with his foot. This is another thing as well, that supposedly they have this technology that allows them to draw the perfect line. I don't really buy that with the cameras you've got in operation. And another thing is the frame rate of when the ball actually leaves the boot. for the pass. But again, let's not get into the minutiae of this. It was the right decision. There was 1+1 before Kyogo was there. My issue for the first goal was, and this is maybe a bit harsh, Xander Clark. He takes a step forward just as the ball's delivered, then takes a step back, then comes out to punch. Now, if you punch in an area where there's a lot of people around you and you're barged and you're bumped and whatever, totally get that. Could he have caught it? I don't know. I'm just putting a point. And it wasn't a great punch direction of it, and you can't really guarantee where a punch is going to go. And then when it's played back and he's trying to scamper back, Xander Clark had a good game overall. He made some decent saves. But for that, just a question mark over the goalkeeper's decision, A, to punch, and B, the poor punch. And he got back as quick as he could, but it was the correct decision that Kyogo was onside.
I get that about Xander Clark. I'll ask Scott about something here as well, though. I understand the logic behind bringing everyone back for corners, and it has been effective throughout the season. I think one thing that popped up for me with this is that we had literally every single player inside the box. We didn't even have someone on the edge. I think Kenneth Vargas was maybe a couple of yards inside the box, but he was on the kind of nearer side. Hatate is at the edge of the box with, what, 10, 12 yards in front of him with no player, no Hearts player near him. For me, I think we maybe are getting a little too deep on the corners. You know, even have someone on the edge, I don't know if that's maybe unfair on my part or what you think of that, Scott.
No, I think it's a fair comment. It's a strange one. Obviously, the very surface level of our set-piece defending, we've been very good this season. When you go a little bit underneath it, you actually see that we've given away a number of good opportunities from defensive set plays. So with a bit better finishing, those stats wouldn't look quite as good. There was a particular part of the season where I was getting a little bit concerned and frustrated about the fact that we didn't have anyone at the edge of the box. There was a spell of games over Christmas where we played Ross County at home and Hibs away and Livingston away. And during those games, they all were doing the same thing. They were all knocking the ball either right to the very back post or just to the edge of the box. And we were giving away a lot of opportunities. So I'm hoping that over the summer, that's something that we can maybe address and tweak slightly. Because, you know, ultimately that does allow Hitati the time to, albeit, make a very smart decision. Not a lot of players would have done what Hitati done, but he lofts the ball into a very sort of dangerous area, knowing that Kyogo has the awareness to be there in the right place at the right time as well.
21st minute, Celtic double their lead, despite Hearts, as we mentioned, actually playing pretty well in this opening quarter of the game. It's a wonderful ball from Matt O'Reilly. Even if he's not the PFA player of the year, he is certainly one of the best players in the division, without a doubt. Great ball over the top in behind the Hearts defence, and Kyogo Furuhashi doing what he does best, playing on the shoulder of the last man, keeping himself onside, no doubt about this one, and just kind of measuring a ball into the bottom right corner. Then Celtic start to dominate, and Xander Clark has to make quite a few good saves. End of the first half, he makes a really good one from a Furuhashi shot on the spin. 12 minutes in the second half is a great double save from Hatate and O'Reilly. Kind of actually thought it was a bit Gordon-esque the way he made one save and was so quick back up to make a second block. Like, Craig Gordon's always been terrific at that, not just making a first save, but being really aware and alert to get back up and ready to make a second block. So I think he certainly, if there was any blame on him on the earlier goals, I think he more than redeemed himself with the amount of saves that he made. The other end, Hearts did get in behind, though. Vargas and Oda both got in. Vargas was offside, but Oda probably should have done better with a final shot that was saved. And then we got one of the very rare instances in Scottish football, Mark, a VAR decision that absolutely nobody was going to argue with when, with 5 minutes to go, Lawrence Shankland inexplicably stuck his hand up and almost punched the ball away. And I think even Lawrence Shankland himself, when you see his facial expression, knew exactly what was coming.
He was caught with his hand in the cookie jar. I think the reason he was as sheepish as he was because he thought he might be getting a second yellow, having already been booked. And it was deemed penalty was sufficient, clearly a handball, Speaking of cards, I don't think we have discussed the Callum McGregor challenge on Kenneth Vargas. Kevin Clancy was looking straight at it, didn't even bat an eyelid. Play continued. I think Hearts got a corner or something, had a chance from it. Did either of it you, was, having seen the replay?
It was when it was in the build-up to that early chance for Shankland, yes. Actually. Yes. I have to say, when I was watching on a screen in the studio, it didn't even register to me at the time. I have seen a replay since it.
Yeah, what do you think?
What's very hard to tell is whether Callum McGregor actually lands on Vargas or not, because we're only seeing a wide-angle shot. It looks like it could be a bad one, but I don't know if the camera gives you enough detail to see, did he land on him or was he just landing near him? So unless someone's seen I only saw a wide-angle shot of it, which was very hard to tell. Because we also saw the Lembekisa one, and I know Des Roach, who's been on the podcast before, I know their podcast spoke about the McGregor one being one that should have been looked at, and that Dexter Lembekisa was lucky not to have one looked at with a high boot on Forrest. I'm not 100% on both, I would have to say. I don't know what Scott thinks.
I think you give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he's trying to almost sort of jump over Vargas. And again, there's no real definitive proof that he sort of lands on him. Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm being a bit blasé about it, because ultimately the result in the fixture didn't really mean too much. But yeah, I think you give him the benefit of the doubt in that situation.
Okay. I was going to avoid those, but Mark's thrown them out there. So
I just thought we were talking about Shankland, because
you've
seen referees hand out a second yellow for that. I think the right decision was just to award the penalty and no further action necessary as far as cards were concerned. And while we were talking about that, it just made sense just to get both of your opinions on the challenge.
I think what I would be surprised at, and I think what was maybe highlighted by a few, is why were they not even looked at, I guess, because we've seen lots of other things looked at that maybe are not even, don't even have a suggestion of a potential, you know, VAR.
They say everything is checked. I have my doubts. I think if that was checked, then I don't know. I'm just saying.
As do I, but we'll move on from that one, because it's not all doom and gloom. It's not all doom and gloom, because the Hearts are going to Europe. And although we knew we were going to Europe, but we know we've got a proper European tour, so don't stop the party, as the song goes, because Rangers defeated Kilmarnock comfortably on a Sunday. Eventually, it meant that Hearts had secured third place, they could not be caught, and would be guaranteed. Oh, it's always so easy to fall into saying group stage football, but league phase football, because of course the format changes next season, which means at least 6 group games, league games, potentially 8, as well as the playoff match. So lots of European games coming our way. I thought there was a good piece on the Heart Standard, actually, by Scotland's Coefficient.
Yes. It's a
Twitter account, or X account run. They're at Scotland's CoF1, if you want to find them on Twitter. So they had a piece on the Heart Standard, which was about the potential European games that Hearts could be facing. So I thought we'd have a quick look at that just now. So the playoff dates, so Hearts will be in the playoff for Europa League, is 22nd and 29th of August, those two Thursdays, just before, as Mark highlighted earlier, the transfer window closes on the 2nd of September. Good thing for Hearts, already 3 league weekends in, whereas fourth spot, be that Killie or St Mirren, will have to start in July, so before the league campaign starts. The draw for the playoff round, that playoff that we'll be playing in, is Monday the 5th of August. Possible opponents will be confirmed at the end of the season, but on the piece in the Hearts Standard, they highlighted some potential opponents based on current League position. So there's some big hitters in there. So this is Europa League playoff. You're looking at Dinamo Zagreb, who Hearts have played before. Braga, who Hearts have played before. LASK in Austria. Molde, Victoria, Pilsen in Czech Republic. Union in Belgium. Partizan Belgrade. You got maybe some other ones that Hearts could have more of a chance with. Sheriff in Moldova. Hapoel Beersheva in Israel. You've also got Apoel Nicosia, Malmö and Besiktas would be tough ones. So Hearts would do well to avoid a tough draw in that playoff, I think, Mark.
You need a bit of luck. You need a lot of luck. There are certain draws that you could end up with. I mean, I think we got one of the better draws with Rosenborg. We avoided the top kind of coefficients in that little pool when the draw was made. And there's even, I think, Besiktas, I saw, even though their coefficient's just 3 above Hearts at 10, their squad value is about 130 million. So you need a bit of good fortune. Just because someone's got a high coefficient, that could be in part due to the country that they play in. So would you just have to wait and see. And until it's finalized and we know roughly. And I thought it was an excellent article, and it's basically a comparison that might be in Hearts' best interests to play in the Conference League, even although they'll get two fewer games, because there's more of an opportunity to qualify from the Conference League to the Conference League knockout playoffs than there is by coming down from the Europa League playoffs. So, yeah, I just want a winnable tie if possible, but also a decent trip for the Hearts fans. And it was weird being in Switzerland for that game that I did in St. Gallen against Zurich, knowing that no matter what happened in the tie, there would be another 3 trips guaranteed. It would be nice to have another 4 trips guaranteed if we stayed in the Europa League. But Hearts fans were brilliant. I still get so envious of Florence and seeing the parties that they had. Obviously, there was the Rosenborg game away from home. Not as many went to that. You know you're going to... By the way, if we get Newcastle, if they are to qualify, can you imagine how many would we take down there? We can get many tickets for it, but how many Hearts fans would go down for something like that? You want glamour, and you want winnable games as well. That's in the group stage, certainly for the playoff. You just want something you've got a chance of getting through, because if you draw an English team, you're pretty much done.
I think glamour, but I mean, go to Newcastle, it's closer than away game at Pataudry. But I'm looking at some of the bits from the article, so I'll quote some bits here. So in terms of the finances, the article said on Heart Standard, the drop-off in finances isn't nearly as severe as from the Champions League to the Europa League. So this is comparing Europa to Conference. The overall UEFA pot split is 3 ways, 74% to Champions League, 17% Europa League, and nearly 9% to the Conference. If we look at just the starting fees, which is an equal amount paid to all teams competing in each tournament, only one aspect of the prize money, it's 18.62 million in the Champions League, 4.31 million in the Europa League, and 3.17 million in the Conference. That's euros, incidentally. So although there is less money involved in the Conference League, the drop-off is not nearly as steep as from the Champions League to the Europa League. So they did a projected potential scenarios. So this is excluding the likes of ticket sales. And it was basically saying that a bad campaign, so going out at the league phase, could be 5 million Europa, 4.3 million Conference, an average campaign, maybe getting 24th spot. So in the league phase, that would get you through at least 7 million Europa, 5.3 million Conference. And your outstanding campaign for either could be a potential 12 million euros. But I mean, we're talking about getting into the top 8 of the league phase and maybe 8 million for the Conference. And the type of teams we'd be playing would make it very tough, especially in Europa. I mean, they went to some of the pots. I'm not going to list every team, but the Europa phase, you're talking about 2 teams from each pot. One of the pots that you'd have 2 teams from is Man United, Porto, Atalanta, Ajax, Frankfurt, Lazio, Tottenham, Slavia Prague, and Real Sociedad. So you'd be playing 2 teams from that pot, which is pretty tough going. Just a reminder in terms of the format, it does open up. I think this is the big thing. It does open up more opportunities for Hearts to go through, doesn't it? Which I think is the big thing in terms of the league phase. I'm not quite sure of it in terms of how, if it's going to be a good change or not. I don't know what you feel of it, Scott.
I think it's worth a shot. I think ultimately the proof will be in the pudding, but I think, like you say, it is going to potentially give a bit of an option for clubs like ourselves. It's similar in some respects to the argument that we make about extending the Scottish Premier League. We all know that it's more difficult to keep, you know, in line with Celtic and Rangers because we've got to play both of them four times a season, and that ultimately is detrimental to the rest of the league, whereas a bigger league where you're playing them only twice each a season, there would be the potential for someone 1 year to potentially, you know, ride on their coattails and maybe even surpass them. So I do think that the new format does offer that option to clubs of our stature. I'm going to be completely honest. When it comes to European trips, European adventures, European campaigns, I always see this as something of a making memories sort of exercise, rather than worrying about the, you know, the financial gains of it all. I tend to leave that to the bean counters at Tynecastle. I know it'll be ultimately positive for us, especially now that we've done all the required work that we needed to do during last season, which obviously slashed our prize money by a good sort of million or two. So it'll be good to know that everything that's coming in will be going straight into the club.
Yeah.
And we don't have to carry out that work again. But yeah, for me, it's about fans being rewarded. It's about players being rewarded. Players get to represent the country. And to the same degree, the fans do as well. I think that away trips in Europe offer an opportunity for fans to kind of almost act as representatives of the club, ambassadors of the club. Away fixtures in domestic football are, you know, it's so tribal, it's so toxic sometimes that really sometimes you don't really enjoy yourself. You know, you turn up to the games, you watch the game, you go straight home. I do think that European adventures offer something a bit different, and that's the big draw for me. It's making those memories, it's having those floodlit midweek nights at Tynecastle that evokes those sorts of memories of watching Hearts in the late 80s and early 90s as well.
I think Scott makes some good points there. And you want as well games that are accessible, games that have direct flights, ties that you can... I mean, look, I said Newcastle. Ideally, Scott's right, you want to make memories. And Hearts fans have got memories forever from Liverpool. But with a bit of glamour thrown in as well, something that's not difficult to get to. I was lucky enough, my first away game was in Estonia, followed by Mallorca, 1998. But the memories I've got are Braga, Bordeaux, loads like that. And even some of the games in defeat, I mean, I doubt that any Hearts fan who was in Florence will ever forget being in Florence. It's not just about the game, it's about everything that Scott said, making memories. The number of mums and dads that are taking their kids to Germany this summer, because it's accessible to go and support Scotland at a Euros. Would there be as many if Scotland qualified for every Euros? Probably not. And this is the first time we've qualified for a tournament outside of these shores since 1998. We don't know when it will happen again. We now have that kind of... We grew up, all of us, in an era where Scotland qualified for most World Cups up until 1994, got back in 98. They qualified for the Euros for the first time that I remember in my lifetime in 1992 and did it again in 96. Didn't get back there until recently. So it's an opportunity for Hearts fans, mums and dads, to take kids, if it's inaccessible, if it's Spain or somewhere where there's direct flights, and make memories forever. Because Scotty's perfectly right. There's only so many times that you can go and sit behind a pillar at Celtic Park, and the joy that you get there is, what, one win in God knows how long? This is a chance to make memories forever, and the bonus would be if you can get a result to bring back to Gorgie along with those brilliant memories.
You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forrest Hepburn and McDonald's Signs, who have been offering creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Before we go, we of course have to look ahead to the next game for Hearts, which will hopefully be a big party at Tynecastle with beach balls, etc. Now, Hearts Dundee has been a very entertaining fixture, especially the last few games. 3-2 wins for Hearts in both the last two matches. Hearts going into this without a win in three, Dundee without a win in five. They're now 5 points adrift in fifth place. Mark, are the shackles going to be off? Are we going to get back to winning ways? Is it going to be a free-flowing, brilliant Hearts performance? Shanklin getting back in amongst the goals and just a lovely day at Tynecastle.
Yeah, I think it will be. I've got absolutely no clue what the lineup's going to be. A lot will depend on training this week. Be interesting to see if there's youngsters given a chance. It's not going to be, well, let's just play the B team. None of that nonsense. There's going to be an inclusion of some youngsters, I would imagine, mixed in with what we already have. I think it's important we get back to winning ways as well, because recent seasons, pretty much every season since the top six split came in, we've not been great after the split. The fact we haven't scored in three games, how we didn't score at Kilmarnock, I don't know. But to lose at Ibrox to lose at Hampden and then draw 0-0 at Rugby Park and lose 3-0 at Celtic. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing us playing with a bit of freedom, as you mentioned. So I think it'll be a decent high-scoring game. Does Xander keep his place in goal? Nothing to do with Celtic Park. I'm just saying, what's the plan now for the last three games as far as the goalkeeping situation is concerned, by way of, and this is an interesting thing and an important thing to note as well, getting Craig Gordon and Xander Clark. I think Xander's position in the Euro squad for me is already guaranteed. I'm more confident that Craig Gordon will be in the squad than Craig Gordon is. Put it that way. I think it'll be Xander Clark and Craig Gordon.
Well, now he's 26 as well. Probably take four.
Yeah, but you're not taking four keepers. You're taking three goalkeepers, and then you're maybe taking a chance on someone like a Ben Doak or whatever, because Nathan Patterson and Billy Gilmore, I think, were in the Euro 2020 squad in 2021. So you're only taking three goalkeepers, and I think it'll be Craig Gordon along with Xander Clark. And the importance of that, as we remember from having the Aussies in the World Cup squad, we get paid on that. You get paid for having players represent the country by UEFA and by FIFA for the World Cup. So to have what should be three players, Lawrence Shanklin plus the two goalkeepers, that's worth it from a Hearts perspective financially. So I don't see the point of playing Xander Clark in all three games between now and the end of the season at the expense potentially of Craig Gordon not being in the Scotland squad. Will it make any difference? Is Stevie Clark's mind made up? Only he can answer that. I think Craig should play in at least two of them in the hope that that is enough for him to be a goalkeeper, one of three, in the Scotland squad, and make sure that we get the cash for him, for Xander, and for Lauren Shanklin.
Scott, what do you expect for this game? Do you anticipate a few changes to the Hearts team for the match against Dundee?
No, I don't think there'll be a lot. I think there might be one or two. We might see a switch back to the back four, potentially. I think you might see Natty Atkinson come back into the team. You might see Alan Forrest come back into the team. But I don't think you'll see too many changes. I think I'm quite looking forward to this game. Dundee are a good side to watch, especially middle to front. They've got some erratic players like Bakayoko, Silla. They've got individuals who don't always turn up week in, week out. And then you've got the consistent ones like Cameron and sort of McEwen and that as well. But they are a good side to watch, and they're not great at the back. So they're susceptible to losing goals. I do feel that we've got goals just round the corner. I think there's been enough, albeit there's been bad decision making or poor quality on show at times with the last touch in the last few games. Our patterns of play are really starting to come together as an attacking team. And I do think Saturday could be an example of things just clicking into place. And yeah, I'm quite confident we'll get a comfortable 3 points.
Excellent. That's what we're hoping for. Mark, give us a scoreline and a goal scorer.
I'm going to go for a really random one. I'm going to go for a 4-2 Hearts Barry Mackay among the goal scorers.
That is very random and bold. I like it. Scott?
I am going to say 3-0 Hearts, and Cammy Devlin's going to be one of the scorers.
Oh, good shout. I like that.
Nice. He's been getting close the last couple of weeks, so could well happen. Oh, I mean, both teams tend to be scoring when these sides meet recently, so I'll probably have to go with the old BTTS. So I am going to say...
Is that one of your bands? Is that like BCR? Bay City Rollers? I know it's both teams to score. I know
people
that.
Say BTTS
but,
all the time.
But is it an initialism or is it an acronym?
I've forgotten now. Initialism.
It is.
It is, yeah. Don't try and play my own game here. I'm going to say 4-1 Hearts.
4-1.
Okay. I was going to say 3-1, but you know what? Let's just go for it. I think we'll be playing with a bit of freedom. It'll be an open game. Like Scott mentioned, Dundee are a good team to watch, but they do tend to play quite open. I think that'll play into our hands. We'll concede a goal, but we'll be rampant at the other end. And Tynecastle will just be a glorious place to be. In terms of goal scorers,
no one said Shankland yet.
Shankland will be on the score sheet.
Well, just play it safe then. If you've got four goals and you don't
say
Shankland.
I'm going 4-1 Shankland. Shankland 4-1. There we go.
Okay.
Whatever happens, we'll be back next week to discuss it. And yes. We can
Before you finish off. The reason I mentioned Lawrence Shankland was meant to be kind of hint, hint. While we have been on, I say on air, not a bloody radio station, while we have been recording, I've put the feelers out to some people that I trust in Scottish football to see if anybody could bring me up to date with the Lawrence Shankland situation. So here's what I've got for you right now as we sit. Not being confirmed or anything like that. I am led to believe that the current and latest package offered to Lawrence Shankland is a total of $14,000 a week. Now, it's not been signed. And it was said that everything will be done in the summer, as far as not everything agreed, but they would reconvene in the summer with negotiations and whatever. But that is what I'm led to believe. The latest package on the table that's been offered to Lawrence Shankland and his advisors is £14,000 per week.
You know this will be in the tabloids within 24 hours.
I don't care. That's what I've been told.
As long as you'll live and die by that statement.
I'll live and die by that statement as much as the person I got it from who's, don't know if he's ever been wrong.
Okay.
With the info I've had in the past. Now, that's not to say that he would accept if that is true. And again, I've got it from someone I trust. It might not be true, but I think it is.
Okay. I mean, that's hefty. That is hefty.
Now, I don't know. Look, 14 grand a week, that could be 10 grand basic, 4 grand, okay. Whatever. A $14,000 pack, $14,000, I'm not paying him in dollars, Jesus. 14 grand a week is the package that I'm led to believe has been tabled to the Lawrence Shankland camp.
I'd be if it's true, which we can't confirm, then...
And Hearts won't confirm either. No chance.
No.
Of course not. But, it is what it is. I've put it out there, and that's what I have been told.
Okay. I'd be interested in how it would be structured, but you know, even if it's true, we may never know that that's the truth. But
could be 10 plus 4. Could be many things. A pack,
10 plus package, 2 plus 2. Goal and appearance.
A package of 14...
Laurie will be getting WhatsApp messages tomorrow when this goes out live. It'll be like, shut that Donaldson up.
but seriously, Scotty, if that is true, and I believe it is, I think that puts Hearts in a really good light. You were the ones that brought it up earlier. You mentioned that, Scott, that this is on Hearts.
I would agree, even although I do think it would bring its risks, I think that the intent and the ambition are certainly things that, you know, the Hearts fans can get on board with. So, you can't argue with that. If that is something that's been going on behind the scenes, then fair play to them. Ultimately, with these types of contracts, you're only judged at the end of it, aren't you? Which was always something that was a bit unfair with, not my most favourite figure of Hearts history, but Chris Robinson used to get a bit of a raw deal at the Stephen Adam one. I think if you're to jump back in a time machine and go back to 99 when he signed that deal, I think every Hearts fan was wanting us to offer him that money. It's not Chris Robinson's fault or Stephen Adam's, I have to say, that he was very unfortunate with injuries for the other 3 years of his time at the club. So I do think you judge it by the intent at the time, and, you know, whether it works or it doesn't work is a separate matter, but fair play to them if they have went to those lengths.
I think my point with the Dam one was that exact reason, that you give someone a long, healthy contract at the time, then it doesn't mean that it looks a good contract down the years if they're not still performing at that level and they're still under contract. But you've got to take that risk in football. So, yes, before we go, just to clarify, I take no responsibility for anything that Mark Donaldson says in this podcast. He speaks for himself, not on behalf of Scarves Round the Funnel. Anyway, whatever happens, whether
there you go, there's a wee grenade for you just after the predictions, just before you're going to go. Well, join us next week and make sure you email and at Scarves.
Well, yes, we'll be fine. We'll be enjoying a party at Tynecastle on Saturday when we hammer Dundee and Lawrence Shanklin signs a new deal. Well, who knows? And we'll carry that party on to Europe next season. So don't stop the party. Keep following Hearts, keep listening to Scarves Around the Funnel. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in. Bye. I say y'all having a good time out there. They can't, they won't, they never will stop the party. I say y'all having a good time.